May.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California, and this is tape number 486. No, that was last week. It's tape 487, and it is April 5th, 1981. I was looking at the sheet that accompanied our broadcast last week when I was talking to you. You know, these are taped right off the air and put on tape cassettes, and I have the accompanying bibliography that's available for all of you if you want it, that goes with the tapes, with the sources of information and the date the articles were produced or the books and where I get my information, so that you know it isn't coming from the top of my head. It's really a series of reviews of things that I see in the paper and put together and share with you. And last week's tape, I did IKLRB and took the printed sheet to be copied in Pacific Grove and left the cassette at the tape center. And the title of the printed sheet of last week's broadcast was "The Top Dogs Are Fighting, Musical Chairs, Who Will Kill Their Team Members Off, or Will They Kill Us First?" And in essence, last week, what I was talking about was that it was absolutely necessary that this last week or immediately that the United States either have a military coup d'etat or go to war in Poland, because there is so much coming out in the news about the CIA and the assassination teams and the missing millions of dollars and the counterintelligence espionage that's been going on for the past 20 or 30 years, and specifically the last 10 years, that it was necessary to call a halt and shut up some of these investigations. And because George Bush was director of the Central Intelligence Agency and has a handle on all of this, and Mr. Hay can take care of the international situation. He wanted to be head of the crisis team before Ronald Reagan was shot and was pushed out. I realized that there would be some bullets flying, and I'll go into that in a few minutes. And if you want the tape of last week, you can get it. I won't repeat what I had on the air last week. I did mention that the top of the sheet that Alexander Haig is angry. He wants both domestic and foreign emergency power, and is ready for a quick mood and a move in the White House. And all of you saw Alexander Haig this week taking over his constitutional succession, which he did not, in fact, get from the Constitution. On the sheet, I mentioned the importance of the scandals in Nigeria with counterintelligence money at this time linked to missing money in the Wells Fargo banks in California. And the father of John Hinckley was in Nigeria for a long period of time and has deep involvement in Biafra, Nigeria, for the Central Intelligence Agency. I didn't know the name Hinckley, but I knew Nigeria was involved. I also mentioned Tennessee as being a key point in this coup or junta, and he was also in Nashville, Tennessee, and had contacts and telephone calls there and was protected by the police. He was released in 34 minutes with a small fine, having weapons at the airport, 50 rounds of ammunition and three weapons at the time the president was there, President Carter, in Nashville, Tennessee. In 34 minutes, he was not only released, but the FBI didn't tell the Secret Service that there was a John Hinckley. He had protection of the major law enforcement in the country. And I also connected missing money of the Wells Fargo Bank, $3.5 million, to Nashville, Tennessee. And he did indeed spend a lot of time in Hollywood, California. It was the Hollywood branch where this was missing. And I suggested that this was espionage money going directly to Nashville, Tennessee. And Hinckley went from Denver, Colorado, to California and spent 2 days there with whoever the contacts were. And I believe this is the final processing station for mind control of all the major assassinations coming down the pike. And then he went directly to Washington, D.C. So I was hitting the Hollywood branch of the Wells Fargo with espionage money and the Tennessee connections and the Nigerian connections and General Haig and Bush and even more. And I was pretty close, because that time, 12 hours later, I learned about Hinckley, but I didn't know who he was. But I knew that these were areas that had to be hushed up and were deeply involved in espionage. Now, whenever I'm on KLRB and we have a crisis, the John Lennon shooting or Nelson Rockefeller's death, or the Polish Pope taking over after one Pope lived 30 days, and various Jonestown, I can enumerate endless crises. People call the house and the phone rings about every 3 minutes, and I'm on radio stations that call from around the country, and people want to know, what are you going to say next week? And once the crisis is over, or the mourning is over for Lenin or whatever, people go back to whatever they're doing until the next crisis comes. And one of the problems is that they say in discussing these events, you talk too fast, your names are too many, it's mind-boggling, the connections aren't clear. And that becomes the excuse for people who've had their momentary wailing to go back into that ostrich syndrome. People who take these tape cassettes every week or listen to KLRB the past 9 years, and 2 years I took a time out, they were subscribing to the tapes I continued to make, are not confused by the events. They can read the newspapers, they send articles and books and clippings, and they collect and comprehend perfectly. There isn't anything mysterious about what I'm saying, and it's been an orderly succession for 9 years. And if you turn it on once every crisis, naturally, it's hard to pick up the connecting links. I might say that there's no news service in the world that makes the connections between an event they're describing and the past. I was looking up something in the World Book about Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, and when that event took place in 1971, they didn't go into the role of the French in Indonesia or Alan Dulles in Vietnam, or bring you up to date where Daniel Ellsberg came from at the time he took the papers from Rand, the government think tank. They had the scandal, the government documents were revealed by an employee. But a lot of the work before and after is up to you. There's nobody and no article that takes you through a whole series of events that preceded that crisis. It's impossible to do that, and I think that people that complain about that are looking for excuses not to take these situations into their own hand. Political assassinations and coup d'etat, where a country is overthrown with violence or any kind of chicanery where the government changes hands, is an exact science. I've done it for 17 years, and I can predict within several years or a week or 4 to 5 days when these deaths are going to occur. That happened in 1968 when Rose Kennedy was on the peninsula, May 28th, and I put a letter in her hand telling her exactly how Robert Kennedy would be killed. I'm not psychic, but I had done my research, watched the teams and the team members, and am pretty astute at doing that. That doesn't mean that I can fix my plumbing if it's broken, or sing in an opera, or have other skills or technology, or look through a microscope at cells and make diagnosis. Each person has an individual skill and talent that he does that I can't equal. But there are researchers studying history who can offer a lot to you if you want to know it. And the difference between studying these assassinations and the coup d'etat or the grab for power of Alexander Haig or putting the director of the CIA into the White House, these things should be studied in addition to what other skill you have, because they involve your survival. These people have their finger on the doomsday buttons. They're building bunkers of cement worth billions of dollars for their own safe, not for you. They're talking about limited nuclear war. They have nowhere to put their pollution or their weapon systems. They're on the books for intent to slave labor. They won't pass the anti-genocide law even after Nuremberg all this time. They are handing out dope. They're spraying marijuana with paraquat and poison so that the younger generation are getting cancer. You're dealing with a group of crazy people who really should be with psychiatrists having their heads examined. And they are a team of assassins that have been in power since World War II, since they started the National Security Council. And they collect your taxes. They tell you if you're 18 when to register. They'll tell you what desert to fight in or what jungle to fight in, to come home to have no home or health plan, and find acid rain and pollution and poison in your food, so that whatever talent you have, in addition to that, you have to study them. I didn't want to spend so much time studying them, but survival is important. If you don't want to survive, do you want your children to, or your family or friends? If you don't care about anything, go on doing nothing. But if you want to survive, you're going to have to put some energy into understanding those maniacs that are in office. And when you know they're maniacs, then you can say, why, next week, or 12 hours later, they're going to have to start shooting each other, because there are so many scandals, murderous scandals, the Jonestown story, the SLA, the whole California violence syndrome that they've been pulling for years in order to get their SWAT teams and Reichstag terrorism going. and I say they're idiots, that we have to study and understand these people and put some energy into stopping them. And when you understand them, you know their next move almost down to the minute they do it. Now, speaking of assassinations, this week was a major victory for me and my friends and co-workers, those of us that survived and those of us doing the work now, but particularly a group of five or six or seven of us that have still stayed with the story of the John Kennedy assassination since the day John Kennedy was murdered. It was the Robert Hartman and Jack Anderson on national television. It was the NBC show, April the 4th, 1981, where they were discussing with Robert Blakey that there was, in fact, a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. Now, if those of us have stayed that long into studying this subject, then you should listen to what we have to say again about George Bush and Alexander Haig and what they have in store for you for the next 17 years. Jack Anderson had to eat humble pie and talk about the fact that David Ferry and Carlos Marcello and the anti-Castro Cubans were involved in killing John Kennedy. Well, to say on national television, Good Morning America, that David Ferry and the anti-Castro Cubans played a role in killing the President of the United States is like saying the Defense Department and the CIA did it, because both of those people worked with the CIA. David Ferry worked with Clay Shaw, Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, with the Nazis of World War II, and Wernher von Braun and the group at Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and a group down in Chile, the Colonial Dignidad Nazis that have been overthrowing this country. And to hear it in the morning news, just as one other newscast, was just an amazing thing, because unless you really studied this, you don't know how many years we have taken of crap from Jack Anderson and Robert Hartman, and they're still trying to pull it with you now. They're trying to say that that coup this week, or this attempted coup, was because this assassin or would-be assassin, and I'll refer to him as an assassin, because I don't think Ronald Reagan is going to pull through this in the long run. He's going to die as a result of it. So I'm going to refer to him as the assassin and the coup and tell you why. But these people want to tell you that he had a crush for Jodie Foster, and the motive is solved, never going into the links of the family, the money, the travels, the telephone calls, the contracts, the weapons, the Nazi connections that we'll cover this week and next week as much as we can. Hearing Jack Anderson and Robert Hartman talk about the intelligence community or the agents of the community killing John Kennedy 17 years later reminded me of a song from the play Flora the Red Menace that Liza Minnelli sings called It's a Quiet Thing. Just a few words and we'll go on to Ronald Reagan. The words are, when it all comes true just the way you planned, it's funny that the bells don't ring. It's a quiet thing. When you hold the world in your trembling hand, you think you hear a choir sing, but it's a quiet thing. And many of us who did the research, we knew we were honest and truthful with all of you. I've been on the air starting my 10th year this spring, and we were telling you the truth. The song goes on, I don't hear the drums, I don't hear the bands, the sounds I'm told such moments bring, but happiness comes in on tiptoe. Well, what do you know? It's a quiet thing, a very quiet thing. I don't even think I would have heard the broadcast. A listener who lives over in Pacific Grove called me and said they're going to talk about the assassination of John Kennedy, and it was really a satisfaction to me and my coworkers to see them just quietly, as if it was a news story, oh, there's a conspiracy that killed the President of the United States. Just about the same week that Ronald Reagan is gunned down in Washington, D.C. Now we'll get on to the Ronald Reagan story, and next week I'm going to update you on some more that is directly linked to the Reagan Command, but I don't want to go into it this evening. One is that Harold Smith has been arrested in Los Angeles. He's the fellow that made the leaks of the Nigerian connections to the Wells Fargo Bank, to the Japanese Mafia, to the counterintelligence operations going on there for 8 or 10 years. They picked him up on a false passport application. The FBI has him, and just as there had to be a coup, they had to pull in Harold Smith, and we'll see what happens. Also, there's a link between the tape that I did March the 1st a month ago, what I call the biggest stories that will tangle together. That was a curious case of the disappearing actress, Valerie MacDonald, Michael Hennessy, and another Philip Thompson, and a man named Abbott. John Gordon Abbott linked to Nazi parties, bank robberies, secret information about dispatchers of money transactions, the names of the Brinks drivers, the Loomis trucks, the names of their children, their social security numbers, and so forth. And I knew that this was the beginning of another Chow Chilla episode. Now they've linked that team that I talked about a month ago to the murders in Davis, California, of two students up in Davis. And then the Zodiac is back at work, pictures of the Zodiac killer in California, which is one of Ronald Reagan's counterintelligence violences. We'll do more of that next week. I just want you to know they're in the news. And also, Maxine Cheshire did a column that George Corcola was murdered in the Netherlands. He worked as a CIA agent with Edmund Wilson and Frank Turpel. Those were the CIA men that worked with the Alpha 66 anti-Castro Cubans. He wanted to come to the United States and get protection in exchange for not being charged with a gun-running operation. But he works with Carlos Ramirez and Samuel Cummings, the world's greatest weapons merchant at this point, living in London and Monte Carlo. And Maxine Cheshire wrote in the Washington Post that instead of Corcola coming home to testify to show that the counterintelligence terrorism is coming from the right, from the CIA, funding terrorism to disguise as Russian or Middle East terrorism funded by the CIA, she wrote that he was murdered in the Netherlands and will not appear. And one last point on California violence. I got a letter from Joe Holsinger, the aide to Leo Ryan, and I'm not wandering too far from Reagan because these are all Reagan's babies in California, Stanford Research, UCLA mind control program. I got a letter from Gabrielle Weber, who lives in Berlin, Germany, to Holsinger, that a fellow over in Berlin is linking Timothy Stone, the man who set up Jim Jones in Jonestown, with Donald DeFries and the counterintelligence program at Vacaville and the Phoenix program in Vietnam, that Tim Stone set up the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and Colston Westbrook, as well as setting up the operation of Jonestown. And I did say many, many weeks that these operations would link, and they would link to the Australian bank, the CIA bank in Australia, known as the Nguyen Bank, and tie up to the California bank system up and down California that has used mind control and experimentation upon human beings to create SWAT teams and terrorist tactics. And so these stories, I'll do many more in the weeks to come, but I want you to know that they're in the news and current right now. I'm not forgetting them. Now, about that gunning down of Ronald Reagan this week, many of you read, of course, the relationship of Neil Bush to Scott Hinckley, the brother of John Hinckley that shot Ronald Reagan on the street. Mr. Bush, our vice president, George Bush, says that they were just casual acquaintances. They were going to have dinner the night after the assassination was to take place. If Reagan was murdered on Monday, they had scheduled a dinner together in the home of Bush's son in Denver, Colorado. And Scott Hinckley was friendly with the Bush family. The news media, you notice, is playing this very lightly and going into the Jodie Foster story. I remember the time that when Sirhan was arrested in Los Angeles and Mayor Yorty exclaimed, "It's a communist that killed Robert Kennedy," because Sirhan's brother was parked down the street from where some suspected Reds lived, and therefore that was a communist conspiracy, having his car on the street. But you get a wall of silence now when the Bushes and the Hinckleys know each other, one working for Standard Oil of Indiana and the other having much in common with George Bush. What do they have in common? Because George Bush would succeed if Ronald Reagan dies from poisons that were in that bullet, and I believe there were. They have oil money, lots of oil money and energy in common. They have the CIA in common. I believe the Hinckley family is totally a CIA operation. I went into the chronology of that family very carefully, at least what's come out so far. They lived in Dallas, Texas, and had a lot of money, a $200,000 or $300,000 home. He worked as a volunteer for an African in Biafra in Africa for a church group from Southern California, and yet he was a tiny oil and gas company with a big home. The Wall Street Journal describes the money they had in 1973 when they moved to Denver, Colorado, and the holdings for the company was half of the price of the home they lived in, while he did volunteer work in Nigeria with a Christian group in California. But we'll do more on the thickness of the CIA in common. George Bush was director of the CIA, and And I believe that the Hinckley family was deeply involved with the Central Intelligence Agency. He had a president of the Vanderbilt Energy, it's called, and at the time of the shooting of Ronald Reagan, Vanderbilt Energy was under investigation by the federal agency for $2 million overcharge. Imagine a federal government investigating hours before the president is killed. A corporation in Denver, Colorado, and the son of the president of that corporation is meeting the next evening after the feds are there with the son of the vice president of the United States. They had Texas in common. Hinckley made his money in Texas, lived in Dallas, Texas. George Bush is from Texas. And they had Nigeria in common because of the contacts of Biafra and John Hinckley Sr. and also the problems in Nigeria and Angola that the CIA was having also at the time of Jonestown that Leo Ryan exposed as being actually anti-Castro Cubans and not Castro Cubans down in Angola. George Bush is from Texas, and the night or the day that Ronald Reagan was to be killed or planned to be killed, Bush was out there in Fort Worth, Texas at the time, the old home territory where Hinckley grew up and the family lived. They have the CIA in common in the terms of Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney for the Central Intelligence Agency. And I'll do more about Williams in a minute. He was John Connally's attorney at the time of Watergate. He was a Washington Post attorney at the time Deep Throat was working, and they were squeezing Richard Nixon out to get Alexander Haig and Mr. Bilderfield into control of the White House at the time. They've hired the highest attorney of the Central Intelligence Agency to represent their son when the man who would have succeeded if the son had killed him was the former director of the CIA, and there really are no ex-CIA people. At the time, Richard Helms was charged with perjury, lying about the killing of Allende down in Chile. Williams represented him, too. And this week, if Reagan gets better or soon, he was to entertain Mr. Pinochet, the man who killed Salvador Allende down in Chile. There is a thick can of worms between Richard Helms, the CIA, and George Bush, who became director of the CIA, and Williams, who was the attorney for Richard Helms, who is representing the Hinckley family and their son at this time. The prosecutor on this case, at least the first one that John Hinckley Jr. saw, is Charles Ruff, who did a miserable job prosecuting the Watergate defendants, and they all got off easy. And because there's direct links to the entire Watergate team of Butterfield, Haig, and Bush, I don't see that anyone associated with from the John Kennedy assassination up to Watergate and beyond should be handling this case at all. And, of course, Standard Oil of Indiana is involved because of George Bush's son being a director of Standard Oil of Indiana, and that company was involved in the plane crash of Dorothy Hunt, the bag woman for the CIA at time of Watergate. And if Dorothy Hunt had lived, maybe none of these people would be in power today. They're in power because the secrets were stopped. And when they blew up her plane, they learned how to silence a lot of other people that had information. So that this military junta had a very nice package there with George Bush and Alexander Haig. And I think it is a disgrace that this family was so close and intimate in Denver, Colorado, and uses a CIA attorney and seems to be a CIA dummy front. And Ronald Reagan is gunned down with these people just right behind the scenes, ready to pick up the pieces. There was an article in the San Jose Mercury, Who is John Hinckley? And it goes into a belief that he was a drug user in Denver, Colorado. That was one of the points they brought out. Well, so were the Hell's Angels, and so were the Nazi parties, and the Manson family, and what they call the street people. He belonged to the Nazi party. He was part of their stormtrooper. He had a lot of activity with the far right wing. And one way they finance their activity and their travels is by dealing drugs and weapons, and we've talked about that on many programs. Now, Mr. and Mrs. John W. Hinckley, the parents, let out a little trial balloon in the newspaper through a friend this week. This was a United Press story in Associated Press, April the 4th. And I'll have a few quotations here that remind me of veiled threats that William Colby was giving Howard Baker at the time of Watergate if they went too far into their investigations. And these are from newspaper, this newspaper article in quotes. It says, the parents may break their silence soon after they see their son. They've hired CIA attorney Edward Bennett Williams, and they may soon break their silence. The next quotation is, they would not divulge their exact plans, but they indicated that after they saw their son, they would go to Washington, D.C. before next week. William Sells, a neighbor, said, it is not appropriate for me to reveal any element of their plans. He also said, once the Hinckleys visit their son, they will consider a suitable arrangement to feed the press if their lawyers agree. These came over all the wire services this last week. They also said a doctor who was a family friend from the start of the shooting of Ronald Reagan, when they found out their son was involved, came to the house but said the parents required no special treatment at this time. I imagine that if they're going to blackmail the CIA or get involved in the scandalous operation of their own company, where Mr. Hinckley quickly stepped away, they took the names off the doors, he walked out, there's no identification with him to the company, that Vanderbilt Energy, he's closed shop and run away. That is silly behavior for a man who has 1/6 son to leave a $4.5 million operation, unless you're so deeply involved in the intelligence system that you have to get out, just as the dummy fronts had to do at the time that Watergate was falling apart. Another quotation was, the Hinckleys talked with their son by telephone twice. Now, so far, John Hinckley hasn't killed anybody, and I did a lot of work with prisoners and prison reform for a long time, and it was very few people except Dan White and the John Hinckleys that get telephones where they're in contact with their parents and family. It isn't that easy. Another part of this article said, a week before the shooting, John left his car in the family garage and indicated to his parents he was going to California. All the articles up to now, this is Sunday and the shooting took place Monday, have him taking a Delta airline into Nashville, Tennessee, either from Atlanta, Georgia, or Chicago, taking American Airlines from Nashville, Tennessee, either to New Haven, Connecticut, or New York, taking a $33 taxi ride in Nashville from the airport to a hotel. And outside of that, there hasn't been any message of what kind of car he drives or what he has, but he has a car, and he was deeply in touch with his family right up to the time he went to California. He never worked except 1 week in his life, and the car is left at the family house, but he carried on by foot or thumb or espionage wherever he went, and this is a period of 6 or 7 years that are unaccounted for, except for picking up Mein Kampf and Nazi meetings in St. Louis, Missouri, and checking into a university occasionally from 1973 to 1980 until the fall. He had a lot of time to learn how to shoot. They had a lot of time to do mind control. They had a lot of time to train him for kamikaze work, too. And that is one of the clues to this kind of operation, was the use of kamikaze, and I'll go into that in a minute. They family said that they have no indication of his hostile acts before, but they will go to Washington, and as I say, they will consider a suitable arrangement to feed the press if their lawyers agree, and their attorney is this Edward Bennett Williams, who's had the most important CIA cases for the director of the CIA, William Telbs, at the time of the Watergate, of any attorney in the United States, and that's a lot of it. So they're setting out their veiled threats, and I'll do more about this. I will refer to him as the assassin and tell you why I don't think Ronald Reagan is going to pull through this easily. We'll take a break now. It's the end of the first 30 minutes, and we'll do some more about Ronald Reagan's assassination attempt and the prognosis for the future and John Hinckley and his family.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.
Come on down, we need you. Join us at the YW. Come on down, we need you. Join us at the YW.